This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And what about that Secretary of State, John Kerry? Boston Brahmin, New England upper crust, Secretary of State, former senator, married to a queen of society in New York, D.C., and Boston. Our election is apparently getting him a little red in the face when he talks to foreign leaders. Big whoop.
Everywhere I go, every leader I meet, they ask about what is happening in America. They cannot believe it. I think it is fair to say that they're shocked. They don't know where it's taking the United States of America. It upsets people's sense of equilibrium about our steadiness, about our reliability. And to some degree, I must say to you, some of the questions, the way they pose to me, it's clear to me that what's happening is an embarrassment to our country.
John Kerry on CBS's Face the Nation explaining the 2016 election, or how it's been received in the eyes of foreign leaders. Imagine how mortified he'd be if he had to explain the Vietnam War he fought in, or being a member of the party of philandering and impeached Bill Clinton, or showing photo albums from Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Hey, buck up, folks. People around the world have questions about the 2016 election, but do we owe them answers? It's a debate. It's a discussion. And here to discuss with us is Robert Mann, a communications professor at LSU and a columnist at the Times-Picayune newspaper. Also with us is former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nancy Soderberg.
I spend a lot of time traveling around the world and talking to leaders in various countries. And I would say that they're very, very nervous. They're perplexed. They want to be sure that America is going to lead and that Donald Trump is not going to be president.
And, you know, who cares what they think? This is a democracy. We're America here, and we got our act together, and we can elect whoever we want. Darn it.
Yeah, I think it's, as a lone superpower, the world looks to us for sensible leadership. And when we don't lead, the rest of the world responses, I call it sort of the jello response. They sort of wait and to see what we are doing, or the bad guys show up. For instance, in Syria, I don't think we've been leading enough. So the Russians are sort of driving the truck out there, and that's not good for the world or for us. And Americans does have to lead. We're the strongest economic military power. And when we get involved, things happen. They gel. When we don't get involved, or we say things like Donald Trump has been saying, the world gets very, very nervous. I think you're seeing, as he's getting his foreign policy team together, they're all quickly walking him back from the more ridiculous, naive statements that he's been saying. And I think that were he to get the nomination, you'd see a lot more. Having worked on four presidential campaigns myself, you pull in a whole team that kind of brings you down from the floating rhetoric into a little bit more practical policies, and you're seeing that happen with him as well.
Robert Mann, does any presidential candidate in the United States need to get the Putin vote and the British Tory vote?
I don't think that Trump sees the need for that at all. I think that Trump is playing a very particular game right now, and that is within the Republican Party. He is projecting to the image of the world, a guy who seems to be getting about 90% of the headlines, and perhaps people in other parts of the world don't realize that this is a man who has about 40% of one-third of the electorate, but he's getting all the news. He's gobbling up all the news, and he seems like an unstoppable juggernaut. But we know that Trump is enormously unpopular with women, Latinos, independents, and I think that if he gets the nomination, and once there's a general election, and once all those people have their say, that the image that the U.S. projects to the rest of the world might be markedly different than it is now if we reject him soundly, which I think the American people would eventually.
What message would that send if the American people rejected Donald Trump? Robert Mann?
A big sigh of relief.
Well, Robert Mann, let me just get your view on that, and then I have actually a question for you, Nancy.
Well, you know, I look back at history. I did a book about 20 years ago on the civil rights movement, and, you know, there was a time in the early 60s when the United States was sending an awful message to the rest of the world. In 1962 and 1963, during these violent civil rights marches and demonstrations, the world saw a very ugly image of the country. But it also saw the best of America in the summer of 1964 when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act. The following year, we saw it again in Selma, awful images projected to the rest of the world. And then we saw the best of the country when Lyndon Johnson signed the bill that Congress passed to give voting rights to African Americans and to others. And I think that the world adjusts its opinion of the United States pretty well.
Ambassador Soderbergh, doesn't John Kerry, Secretary of State John Kerry, play a dangerous game in the sense that America has a longstanding tradition of, they don't like what we're doing? Well, then we'll do 10 times more of it. There's an impatience with the rest of the world among mainstream Americans and their opinions about us, don't you think?
I think there is. And there's nothing, having been a diplomat at the United Nations, there's nothing more frustrating than trying to forge consensus among 194 different views. We are the biggest and the best, so why don't we just go do it on our own? The problem with that is that today's global threats are exactly that. We can't solve them on their own, and we have to persuade others to follow us in fighting terrorism, cyber threats, infectious disease, climate change, whatever, or you can take the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Syria. We can't do it all on our own. So we need to have the rest of the world following us. Now, it's not a popularity contest. I don't really care if the French like us, but I do care if they help us out in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. But it's very, very frustrating. And it's always tempting to say, heck with the rest of the world. We're just going to do what we want. And that's Donald Trump's approach, which, you know, on one level sounds quite refreshing until you look below that thin veneer of rhetoric and realize that the world's a lot more complicated and we actually do need to lead global coalitions on today's challenges. We absolutely cannot go it alone.
Are the two of you basically agreeing that Donald Trump represents a problem for America's image in the world?
I think that what I've observed about Trump is that he's a man who has learned to work within whatever system he's in and exploits it. He's exploiting the existing political and governmental system during his career in business. He's done that pretty well. He brags about it on the stump. He's currently exploiting the Republican Party's primary system, which this year seems to reward his particular kind of behavior and rhetoric. And I think if the current primary season required him to be a different kind of candidate, I think he would adapt to that because he has no core principles other than adapting to and exploiting the system that exists at the time. And in the same way, I think he would be forced to adapt to the White House in a way that would force him to moderate his actions and his rhetoric. He will adapt because he always has.
Is it possible that all the attention on Trump keeps the world from seeing perhaps equally dangerous implications of a Cruz presidency or a Bernie Sanders presidency? I mean, they all know Hillary Clinton, of course.
Well, I think most of the Republican establishment and frankly the Democratic establishment as well is more frightened by Ted Cruz precisely because he's not malleable. I think Trump is governed largely by a narcissistic belief in himself. And when he were he to get in the White House, which I think, as Robert pointed out earlier, he's only got a small percentage of the electorate. But were he to get into office, what would happen is he would stumble around, try his rhetoric out on our allies, and essentially fail for the first 2.5-3 years, and then probably end up changing towards the second half of his first term, which I think would be a single-term presidency. But the truth is, we don't know. People, when they get into office, grow in ways that can be good or bad. I think in his case, it would be a very dangerous experiment that would fail, and then whether he could pick himself up and let reason rule, we'd have to see. I'm hopeful that that won't happen and that we'll have some sanity prevail in the Republican Party, which really needs to think through what kind of party is it.
For both of you then, and I know that both of you have a certain long view of history here. There have been many events in American history that have been variously entertaining or outrageously embarrassing to America over the last couple of generations, starting with Watergate, the Checkers speech. Then you've got Clinton and stains on dresses and all kinds of just tawdry details that got him impeached. In the pantheon of American missteps and faux pas, where would you put this?
I would put it up pretty high. we are bemoaning the fact that we have gridlock in Washington. I mean, the presidency he is not the all-powerful person that I think he thinks he will be if he gets in the White House. He'll find out pretty quickly that his powers are quite limited. Just ask Barack Obama. And right now, we're pretty frustrated by gridlock. If Trump gets elected, we may find gridlock is our best friend and the one thing that could save us and the rest of the world from some of his most reckless actions.
Ambassador Soderberg, I'll give you the last word here. Where would you put this episode in the pantheon of embarrassing moments of America to the rest of the world? And any other comment you'd like to make?
Well, first of all, there's a big difference when it's a silly season of an election campaign and presidential mistakes once they get into office. I agree that America does have healthy checks and balances, and he's likely to go down as a failed president that didn't get a whole lot done. And that's, I think, something that will become very clear as his views, or lack thereof, become clear and people begin to run away from him once they really look at a Trump presidency. That's I'll try and end on a hopeful note for the country.
Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nancy Soderberg, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having us.
And Robert Mann is professor at the Louisiana State University and columnist at the New Orleans Times-Picayune.
Thank you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.